My name is Nicholas Sylvester, and my partner here is Terrell Lewis, and we're interviewing Mr. Kareem Ogoro over the phone call on July 18th on a Monday at 10:21 a.m. Mr. A, do you give us permission to record and make this public this oral history?
Yes.
Okay, let's begin. And as a reminder, you do not have to answer any question that makes you uncomfortable.
Okay. Questions probably won't make me uncomfortable. If I don't feel like answering, I won't answer it.
Yeah, you have an opportunity not to answer as well. All right, let's begin. Please share as much basic information as you are willing to share. First, your name.
So my name is Kareem Ogoro.
Your age?
I'm 40 years old.
Occupation?
I'm a social studies teacher at Elmont Memorial High School, Junior Senior High School, sorry.
Neighborhood?
That I work in or live in?
I think it's where you live in.
I live in Kings Park, Suffolk County, New York, on Long Island.
Okay. Place of origin?
Originally, my parents are from Nigeria, and I was born in the United States, Providence, Rhode Island, but I was raised in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. And ethnic identity?
I identify as Nigerian American.
Okay. All right, Terrell, you're up.
Okay, so I'm gonna start with the next question, which is, tell me about your journey to MBK and when you joined, and how did you think you could impact the community of MBK?
So I want to say that in 2018, I became an adult leader in the Men of Elmont program at Elmont Memorial High School, which is our mentorship program. And I've been involved in mentorship in Elmont Memorial since then. When the opportunity for My Brother's Keeper came to our school, Principal Doherty informed me about it and told me that it was similar to Men of Elmont, and it was an initiative by President Obama, and that we would be one of the new schools participating in it. And I told them that I'd be interested because it was similar work with the young men and mentorship and trying to guide you guys to keep you guys on the path that you guys are on, which is a path to success. What was the rest of the question, Terrell?
The rest of the question was, how do you think you could impact the MBK community?
How do I think I can impact it?
Yeah.
Well, I think that I have a lot of life experience, and I think that with my life experience and my relationship also with people outside of the school setting, that I could use those tools to help, I guess, guide and mentor young men like yourselves to kind of understand some of the obstacles that may come your way as you continue to grow through high school and as you enter college and life after college. I also have like this experience and these relationships. I could also kind of use that and those people and their experiences to kind of give you guys information and also guidance and knowledge on their experiences as well, so that, again, you guys can navigate your way to adulthood, right? I think that is the best way to say it, like the ability to be able to mentor you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
And
describe the impact of MBK in your community.
Okay. So as of right now, we've been a part of MBK for about this has been our first year, right, guys?
Yeah.
For about a year.
Yeah, first year.
All right. So in our community, as of right now, we have some projects that are going to be kicked off, especially like we planned them in the spring, but they're going to go into effect in the fall. And one of the projects is our school beautification project, where we will be putting motivational quotes all over our school building. Our student mentees and the adult leaders, myself and Principal Doherty, will be taking charge in doing that. We'll be also getting some of our Mid-Elmont members to help us out with the MBK project. And we're also going to be mentoring students in the elementary school throughout our district, where we'll be beginning a book club with them, and we're going to be reading a couple of books. Actually, one of the books that we're going to be reading, I have already. I don't know if you guys even know about this yet. It's a book called Stamped for Kids. It's about racism, anti-racism, and youth. It's by Jason Reynolds and Ibram Kendi, and we're going to be reading this book in the fall with some of our mentees from the elementary school. So you guys are going to be taking charge of that. Also, we have like three other books. We're also going to be reading the book that you guys read the first book we read with MBK. Do you guys remember the book we read?
Not sure. That was Not Truth, right?
Yeah, we're going to be reading that with them as well. And that also, like, in the spring, last school year, in the fall and spring, when we read those books, and it gave you guys an outlook on, or a different view of the world from other people's perspectives. So that's some of the work that we've done so far and that we're going to be doing in the upcoming school year.
I didn't even know that. Yeah, honestly, I didn't even know that. But so the next question is, what societal issues do the young men of color you serve face, and what steps are you taking to help with these issues?
So you got to break them questions up. You got to ask me one question at a time.
So the first one is, what societal issues do young men of color serve face?
All right, so there are many societal issues, but I think the major ones are kind of what you guys see in the media and in the world around you with the race relations, and how specifically Black men are treated in American society. People of color in general, but more specifically because you guys are going to be Black men, the way Black men are treated, the opportunities that Black men have, the access that Black people have, the relationship between African Americans and police, just like those things. The fact that one thing that I'm big on is the fact of not seeing many Black men as teachers. You guys don't get to really learn from Black male teachers, especially since I don't know how many Black men teachers you guys had at elementary school, but in high school, I think I'm the only one there. And I didn't teach you guys when you were in eighth grade. And then when I taught African diaspora and stuff, I didn't think you guys were in that class as well. So yeah, so just inclusion, equity, race relations, access, just being able to navigate in America as a Black man. I think that there's a lot of things that come to mind when you think about it. Just being a Black man in America, right? I think that is something that's very, very difficult. And you guys are young men, teenagers, and you're growing towards your manhood. And I think that some of the difficulties that you face now are going to be amplified when you guys step out of Elmont Memorial High School. And I think that the best way that we can prepare you guys for that is through mentorship and what we're doing with MBK and Men of Elmont. And Terrell, what's the second part of the question?
The second part was, what steps are you taking to help these issues?
Okay, so I think I kind of answered that, but the steps are being a mentor in MBK and Men of Elmont. Planning the projects that we're working on in the fall with throughout our school and with the MBK and the youth in our elementary schools. The fact that I assisted with a group of teachers who wrote the African diaspora curriculum that we're going to have this coming fall. That's some of the things. Also, when I do teach in my social studies classes, bringing forth multiple perspectives, one of them specifically being the perspective of African-Americans in the U.S. throughout the history that I teach, which is from Civil War to the present, bringing current event issues into discussion. Some of the stuff we do in our team meetings when we meet for mentorship, guys, like just speaking to you guys from experience, showing you guys other perspectives, being mindful and specific about the Black male perspective when mentoring you guys or when teaching my students. And yeah, just that as a whole. I'm a teacher, I'm a coach, I'm a mentor in our school. I coach football, and I overall just try to help young our students, and especially you young men, you Black young men. So yeah.
Okay, I agree. And you actually were the first Black teacher I ever met, to be honest.
You said what?
You're the first Black teacher that I ever met.
You never had a Black
Terrell? What
nope, about I never had one.
Miss Butler.
Oh, yeah, Miss Butler.
I said male.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
male. Yeah, that's true for me as well. I never had a male Black teacher, and I don't think I've known any other male Black teacher. But I feel like it's really important, especially in our school, because our school is full of people of color, and I feel like a Black teachers are good. I mean, not to say that the current teachers are bad or anything. I just feel like it, in terms of representation, it'll be better for us to have like more Black teachers because we're a predominantly Black school. So I think that type of stuff is important too.
I mean, we do have a lot of Black teachers. The thing is that I think that I'm the only male Black teacher. And then we have
you are.
Mr. Flurry and Guidance. We have Coach, the track coach.
Yeah, Mr. Graham.
Mr. Graham. And we have the soccer coach.
Reggie.
Yeah, Reggie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not necessarily Black teachers, though. Black male teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know. And we have some Black female teachers, but we have a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you guys said, we have Miss Butler, we have Miss Harvey, Miss Gilliam, Miss Allen, Dr. Huffman.
Yep.
There's so many more in foreign language and math. Miss Brown. Yeah, we do have some female representation, definitely.
Yeah.
We need some more male representation.
Yeah. And the second part of the question was, how does the issues of today's youth differ from the issues of youth of color faced when you were younger?
Different. Okay, so I think that, all right, so, I think you guys face some of the same things we face. I think majority of the same things. I think the difference is today is that with the innovation in technology and our mobile devices, cell phones, iPads, and social media, You guys get to see things very, very quickly. And that, just those tools can be negative and positive. So it's positive that you guys can see when bad things are happening. For instance, with George Floyd, how we saw it and it was real, and it was able to kind of motivate people to go out and protest, right? The negative part about that is that we see trauma all the time, all day. Like, literally, you could open your phone and you'll see an unarmed person of color being killed, either by being shot or what happened to George Floyd, where they had the knee on his neck. Like, recently, they just shot this kid. They shot over 60 times. He was hit, like, 40 times. He was unarmed, and they weren't able to, you know, to explain why that happened. Also, the event in Texas, the school shooting, right? There's video that's being released now of the school shooter shooting at the school and walking into the building. Like, yes, it's good to share information. I'm all for sharing information. But part of that of sharing the information is also can be traumatizing, but you guys can see, like, actual, really, like, you guys can see really bad events happen, right? And I don't think that that's really good for us to be consuming shootings or killings or murders and stuff like that. The other thing, too, with you guys is social media, the bullying and people being treated, like, badly, people posting videos of people, just that whole dynamic. We didn't have that. Of course, there was bullies when I was growing up, but there wasn't a way where somebody could, like, make fun of somebody and then take a picture of it or make a video of it and then post it on social media or post it in a group chat, and then the whole school can know what's going on. You get what I'm saying? Like, things like that kind of stuff is, I think, totally different from when we were growing up. And then just a lot of social emotional stuff, like being able to deal with everything coming out of, like, the pandemic, where everybody's locked down and locked in their houses, and just, like, going through the course of the last couple of years, seeing the impact of that on kids, their mental health. I think that had a negative impact on a lot of kids' mental health. And that's another thing, too. I think you guys are a lot different than we were. I think that you guys are more vocal. You're more open. And not everyone, but just your generation is more open about talking about mental health, or even being cognizant of your mental health, like understanding, like, hey, this is the impact that stress is having on me. And then knowing how to kind of deal with the stress, or looking for ways to deal with the stress. And, for instance, using us mentors as ways to help with the stress. Like, you guys remember when we used to do we used to meditate? You guys remember when we used to do that? Before every meeting? Hello?
Yeah, we remember.
Yeah.
Like that. There's so much more. I think in this generation, your generation is also more cognizant of, like, self-worth, sexuality, right? Identity, gender identity. Understanding, like, where you come from and wanting to know where your people come from, stuff like that. I think that in our generation, there was a lot of people preaching stuff and trying to teach us that stuff, especially things like knowledge of self. In our generation coming up, there were a lot of people trying to teach us our knowledge of self, to understand where we originated from and our blackness. And I think that my generation, some people were pushed towards going towards learning that stuff, and others didn't really care too much about that. Whereas I think your generation, a lot more young people are asking questions and reaching out and looking for it. So that's another thing. And I think, I feel like I'm rambling. Your generation knows how to use technology really, really, really well. I think that's another plus. Whereas our generation, I think that computers were just starting. We had Nintendo, we had video game systems and things like that. When I was a teenager, I think the internet had just started kicking off. And I feel like you guys are, like, professionals at this stuff, like knowing how to edit images and pictures. Like Terrell did the logo, knowing how to edit film, being able to record videos, even mini movies, make music, engineer songs and things like that. Like you guys, graphic design, you guys are super talented when it comes to using technology. So that's something that's totally different. And you guys don't have to open encyclopedias and go to libraries and stuff like that. You guys could just search the net. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. Thank you, one take seven.
Yeah, I got it. So the next question is, what obstacles / struggles have you encountered in your work?
I'll say this. When I was getting my master's in education, I don't want to call it obstacles. I think that for most people growing up, trying to go to school and get advanced degrees or even further the education, and funding for school is difficult. I do know that there are programs out there, but sometimes those programs don't fit in the way where it is completely beneficial. I think that's the best way to explain it. And when I say funding, I mean paying for school. So some of the obstacles I had was when I decided to go back to school to become a teacher, I had to figure out how to pay for it. So I had to take out loans. And the thing is, when you take out loans, in the immediate, they help you pay for school, but in the long run, they could become a hindrance, especially when trying to like continue to grow your family, purchase a home. So you're having that debt, it can cause a lot of struggle. So that's one thing. The other thing is when I was in college too, just I feel that although school prepares you or is trying to train you to be a teacher, I don't feel like they do it in the best way possible. And I think that answering this would be like super long-winded, but I think that the way it's set up is like they want us to learn the stuff, theories and practices, and read books in school and then go out and observe teachers in classrooms. And then at the end of your classes, you go out and you become a student teacher. I think that the student teacher part should start earlier and also while you're in school still. I think that the best experience is to be in the classroom. The other thing is trying to find a job, right, as a teacher, especially as a Black teacher who doesn't have any connections. And, like, of course you can get a job if you travel all over the country and look in different cities and stuff like that, but if you live in Long Island and you want to work on Long Island, it's like one of the hardest things to do. It's one of the hardest jobs to get is to become a teacher on Long Island, especially if you teach something like social studies. So that was a big obstacle because, again, like I said, I didn't have any connections. I didn't have any relationships that would put me in play to have to get an interview, right? It was so difficult. The other things that are difficult are, like right now, I'm in school right now to get an advanced degree for leadership so that one day maybe I could become a principal or assistant principal or assistant superintendent or superintendent. One day I'm going to do all of those things, right? So doing that process, trying to figure out what school to go to and how to pay for it, that's another obstacle that's been really, really difficult. It's similar to when I was going back and getting my master's. You got to take out loans. And the programs that are super cheap, they kind of hinder the way you flow and work. For instance, like there's a program that's like a lot cheaper than the one I'm in right now, but it meets like once on a weekend day, every weekend for a year. And being that I coach football, I can't do that because I'd be at football on Monday through Saturday, in school Monday through Friday, and then I would have to go to classes on all day Sunday. I would never see my family, right? So that is one obstacle. And I think that being at Elmont and working with Mr. Doherty, Principal Doherty, I think that he understands a lot of these things. And I think that him and the team that we have at the school, him, Mr. Burke, Mr. Tiros, and then my department chair, Mr. Nawara, I think that they've made it, and all the department chairs, I'm not just saying Mr. Nawara, but they've made it so that in the school for me, or any teachers of color, or any teachers in general, they've made it so that the environment is in a way where there isn't many obstacles. So I don't feel like in the building that I have any obstacles. I don't feel any kind of way when I'm dealing with any of the teachers, any of the supervisors and admin staff. I think that there aren't many obstacles there, right? I think that Mr. Doherty and our school district also make sure that we have all the things we need to make sure that the school runs and that MBK and MOE run the way you need it to run. So if I say, Mr. Doherty, hey, there's a trip that I think the kids should go on, the boys should go on, he's going to say, all right, let's figure it out. And then I could either write a proposal or he'll write a proposal and then we'll figure out a way to budget it or fundraise to make sure we get it done. So I don't think that there's any obstacles there. I think that, did I answer your question?
Yeah, you answered it.
All right, cool.
So the next one is, if it has been, how has mentorship been transformative to you as a mentor?
That's good. So prior to me becoming a mentor at Elmont, I've always had my own mentors. So I know the importance of having somebody with experience and a wealth of knowledge to kind of talk to, pick their brain, ask questions, ask them about their experiences. And I think that because I had mentors before I became a mentor at Elmont, I was prepared for it. So in becoming a mentor and mentoring you guys, I think that some of the ways that it's been transformative is that it's allowed me to also be more mindful of what I say to you guys, to my mentees, and to like just more mindful of how I speak. Understanding the importance of continuing to gain knowledge, read books, be more in tune with what's going on in the world around me, picking up in my own personal activism, right? So for instance, like I remember in 2020, I think it was, they had a march in Elmont. And I remember being worried that because I was untenured that I shouldn't go and march, right? I was afraid that it could hinder my process of becoming a tenured teacher, right? But in turn, speaking to my mentor, speaking to Principal Doherty, it was like they let me understand that like I shouldn't be afraid to be who I am, and I feel like that's something that I kind of preach to you guys as well, or I kind of teach to you guys or mentor to you guys, is that you have to be who you are, be yourself, understand that you have a place in this world, and you have to make sure that you kind of work towards being the best version of yourself. So I think that in mentoring you guys and seeing that I'm saying this stuff to you guys, but I also have to take heed to my own words, right? So I think that it's allowed me to continue to grow and become a better version of myself. Yeah. I don't know if you guys can hear my daughter in the background singing her song.
Yeah, it's all good.
Oh, but one thing, when you said like being yourself, you remember that, mm-hmm. that day in one of the meetings where we were talking about why we shouldn't be wearing do-rags and hats in the buildings. And then you were talking about naps and how your hair and how it, like the natural hair and how we should be proud of our hair.
Yeah.
Who we are.
Yeah. You guys know, like, I'm only going to get a retwist, like, once every 3 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're going to see my locks. You're going to see the nappy sides. And I only shape up my hair every, whenever I get a retwist. So, yeah, man. You got to love yourself, man. You got to love yourself. You got to love it. Your natural state. And be comfortable in your skin, man. I just think that... As a black man with Nigerian parents and my roots being from Nigeria, I know that I have to be comfortable in my skin because, again, like, we all come from a place of kings, a powerful place. Africa is, like, the, I want to say it's like the center of the world. The origin of the world, right? Everything comes from Africa. As much as people may say that it doesn't, I think it does. I know it does. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, man. Is that it?
No, that's not it. I got the next question.
Okay.
So, as a leader in MBK, how have you navigated the nation's racial reckoning since 2020?
Oh, man. A bunch of different ways. One, making sure that I have proper identification at all times and I have all my PBA cards. Making sure that I continue to follow my path and try my best to be an asset to my students and the young men that I mentor. Again, just mentoring, teaching, giving my perspective, teaching the black perspective, never discounting the contributions that African-Americans and Africans and Afro-Caribbeans and all of the black people in this world have given to this world, right? Making sure that I shine a light on that. Trying my best to make sure that my students and my mentees continue to grow towards their potential, right? And then, like, I think, like, the specific examples is my classroom. Right, or any one of our meetings that we have every week, the things that I contribute, or like I said, the people that I bring to come speak to you guys, the lesson plans that I teach, the lessons that we teach in Oma and the MBK, and the things we talk about in our meeting. Give me one moment. I gotta pause a second. I gotta open the door for my daughter's teacher. Hold on.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Hello, how you doing? Yes, you are. That fellow is there. Sherelle, Nick.
Oh,
yeah, we're still here.
Okay, sorry, guys. Yeah. I think I answered the question. That dealt with the record.
You did.
Teaching and mentoring.
All right, Terrell, you got it.
All right, so the next question, in a second. Next question is, how did the pandemic impact your local NBK chapter and your experience in NBK? Basically, like, how did it impact, like, the NBK, how did it impact your experience, basically?
So I want to say that initially when the pandemic hit, we were we had our meetings and we continued our meetings throughout the pandemic. Even when school shut down, we continued to meet every week virtually. So the way the pandemic initially impacted us was that it didn't allow for us to meet in a central setting in person, right? And I think that had a strong impact on just the engagement of all of the students that we had in our program initially, right? And then, so as the course of the year and a half, 2 years went, we started to lose membership. But the core group of guys stayed engaged. And then when we came back to in person, we were able to continue to grow, but we got younger, right? So you guys, if you noticed in our meetings, the guys that are consistently there are the younger guys, right? And that's because I want to say that the older kids that we had prior were so focused on like getting everything ready for college and stuff like that, and just getting reacclimated to being in the school building. So I would say that the pandemic, it's weird, man. Like, I feel like it negatively impacted us a bit. I know that we had to, like, have some meetings with some students just to make sure that they were good, right, emotionally and stuff like that. Yeah, man. Ask the question one more time so I could be sure that I answered it.
No problem. How did the pandemic impact your local NBK chapter, your experience in NBK?
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I think that was it the most, wearing the masks. I remember when we went to you remember when we went to meet the county executive?
Yeah, I remember that.
The press conference, right?
The first time when we were out there, you had to say a thing?
Yeah.
Nick,
I remember.
Right, so that...
Yeah, we took an Uber, right?
No, not that one. No. When we went to... We met with Laura Curran, county executive.
Oh, yeah. Like, and it was on the news?
And we were on the steps? The outdoor thing?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
All right, so... I remember that day when we were meeting everybody for the first time and going there, and we had masks on. And I remember we had to take a group picture, and I just remember being like afraid to take my mask off, even though we were outside, right? So that was one of the things that the pandemic kind of did, got us with, like, just it changed the way we thought about being around people, right? Having to make sure you wear a mask, wondering if people were vaccinated or not. Just all of that, dealing with the fact that people's parents may have lost their jobs, or people's parents may have passed away, or family members passed away, just that whole time. Remember, we're still doing the food bank and giving food to people on Wednesday, right? So think about that. Prior to the pandemic, we didn't do that. Now every Wednesday in the morning, we have families come to the school and pick up food. Right, so that's another thing. So the pandemic, it has negative impacts, but it has some positive ones too, where we were able to provide some community service and help our community overall. So yeah, I'll say that, right? We were able to become stronger as a community and lean on each other and provide our community with food and stuff like that.
Yeah, so there's good and bad stuff
towards the pandemic, really.
Yeah.
All right, so the next question is, what MBK initiative are you the proudest of and why?
So, I think that it's a bunch of things. I love the fact that, so I love the symposium we had at Uniondale, right? Because it just was able to bring all of our Long Island kids together. That was one, and that was a really good, really, really good one. But I think the fact that there's another one, the quote that you guys have posted on social media. You remember that, guys? You guys wrote the thing and then they posted your quotes on social media?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I remember. And I think the recognition that they've given you guys for next year, right? Where they put your bio and pictures up and they sent it throughout the whole state to everybody involved at MBK. I don't know if you guys saw that. There was an email that went around with your pictures and it announced all of the upcoming MBK members for 2022-2023. Did you guys see that?
We didn't see the email.
I think that's what you sent us.
Something like that in one of our meetings.
And then, man, there's so many. And then you guys have the internship that you guys applied for, the scholarship. There's so many things, but the number one, all right, so there's so many things that I like. So the number one thing, though, I think is the projects that we're going to be working on in the fall with the school beautification and the book club mentorship that we're going to be doing with the kids coming from the elementary school. I think that those are the two things because we designed it and we planned it for our building, I think in our community, I think that that is the initiative that I like the most. So I'll say that. Even though I listed a bunch of things before that I thought were cool, I'll say that the one that we're going to be running in our community.
Yeah, that's cool. And then okay, so where do you see the most work needed to be done in MBK?
The most work needed. I think that we can grow the membership more in all the school buildings, like, and involve like more students throughout the school building, and then also bringing people together more, kind of like what we did at Uniondale. I think that should be something that we do like once a year. I think it's something that we do like every either twice a school year or once every quarter. I think that we should get together with all of the chapters that are in our specific region. And if there's an opportunity where we can get together with everybody in the state, I think that that would be good as well. I think us coming together to collaborate on something that can be major is also something that I think is something that we can work on, where we're helping not just our region, not just our town, but something that can be statewide or national. I think that we could do a better job of coming together to do something that can really impact, like, Black people or people of color throughout the state and the country. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay. So the next question is, how can MBK have a bigger impact?
Isn't that the same question? A bigger impact? All right, no. Let me...
Was it? I think, no, Terrell asked, where do you see the most work needing to be done? To be honest, it might be, because how can MBK have a bigger impact? But I think I think this question is just towards MBK specifically.
All right, so I'll tell you this. MBK can have a bigger impact if more states across the nation were doing the work and took the initiative to be as proactive as the state of New York has been. Because from what I remember, this initiative was sent out to all the states in the country, and I think that New York was the only state that adopted it. So I think that MBK could be stronger and better if every state or more states did the work that New York was doing, right? I really think that, and I think that that should be something that New York, like something that we come together as a state where we go out and like present or campaign for other states to adopt what the practices that we've been doing. I think that that would be something that's cool. Like we could work together as a region, as a state, and put together a plan or ideas to present to the state. And we could start with like our neighboring states like New Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and work our way either into New England or down the coast into the DMV and even to the south where we're like, hey, this is what we've been able to do here in New York with this MBK program. And we think that this will be beneficial to you guys in your state, in your towns, in your cities, right? Whether it's suburban or urban, right? Because I can see places benefit from what MBK is doing and what we're trying to do with MBK. I think that there's so many more communities, even within our own state, that could benefit from it, right? In the boroughs, other towns in Long Island. And like I said, as we go up and down the coast, major cities, Atlanta and Georgia, right? Towns in South and North Carolina, especially Florida, Texas, right? All these places where there's people of color that don't have these programs, right? California, right? They have all these places need mentorship, Michigan, Ohio, right? I think that this is, this program could do really, really good work if it was, if everyone took advantage of just using the program throughout this country. So yeah, I think that that would be something cool.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And like the next question would be, okay, are there any challenges, limitations, barriers that your local MBK right now is not capable of solving?
I don't think there are any challenges. I think that one thing that, so for instance, like with MBK, right, we have two official members, which are you, Terrell, and you, Nick, right? I think that in our building and in our community, I think that that limit of two, I think that we have more students that are capable of being mentees in this program and kind of being leaders who can turnkey and learn from MBK and then come and kind of teach what you're learning from MBK to other students in our building. So I think that that limitation right there is like only having two students be part of MBK. I think that we need to have it where it's more students who are officially part of MBK and get the same benefit that you guys get with being part of MBK. I think that that would be the one thing that I would say.
Yeah, because we're the only two, right?
Yeah,
I agree. And then I'd like to add on to that, can MBK work to solve those problems in terms of improving education opportunities for young men of color?
All right, so that's a good question. With MBK, so like when I said I was going back to school to get my leadership certification, I remember trying to figure out ways that I could pay for school and what kind of ways that MBK can help or just the state in general. And I remember we had a meeting. I can't remember. We had one of our meeting in our meeting. And I remember Mr. Austin was talking about all of the funding and ways that students can get scholarships and adults can get scholarships to go back to school. And I think that there's more that can be done to assist teachers or people who want to become teachers, right? Especially people of color. I'm going to be specific to people like me, so Black men of color. I think that there's more that can be done. And I think MBK or, yeah, I think MBK can help in getting that done. So I was trying to use, there's a state program where they discount the cost of going to a state school. But the problem that I face with that is that everything else has to be paid out of pocket, right? So I personally feel, and maybe I'm wrong, right? I feel that there should be a way where the classes are discounted and you can still get federal aid to pay for the classes. That's what I felt. So I already started, and I know that it's probably not going to change, but it maybe it will for somebody else because I said this today. But I think that it's difficult, you know, when you're trying to go back and, you know, get into leadership positions as a man of color and trying to fund it. And, fund it and get it discounted and still try to get federal aid to do it. And the reason why, part of the reason why I want to become a school leader or a district leader is because this kind of brings this whole thing full circle. When I speak to my mentors or people in the administration that I kind of ask questions to, they all always tell me like, yo, you should do it. Get your admin certification because you never know when the opportunity may present itself where somebody may view you as somebody who could become a principal or assistant principal, and you want to be prepared to get into that position, right? And I've always was reluctant to do that because I didn't want to be like a boss of teachers or a leader of teachers. I kind of like being in the classroom and I wanted to teach students and mentor kids. But one of my mentors told me a long time ago, he said that you can teach in a classroom and your scope will only be limited to the kids that walk through your door, right? So 150 kids a year, 130 kids a year, right? If you're just teaching, right? Or you can become a principal or assistant principal and impact all of the kids in the school, right? Or you can become a district administrator and impact all the kids throughout the district. So my mentors kind of told me that I was looking at it too small and I need to look at it as a broader, right? Because when you're an administrator or a building leader, you kind of set the vision of how you want the school or the district to be, right? And you're able to kind of implement the changes that are needed that you think or that you want to make sure that the kids that you want to serve are getting everything that they need, right? So when you talk about everything that we talked about today, where how I'm trying to figure out ways to mentor or help young men of color, or how MBK is helping these people, when you're a school leader or a district leader, you could take that type of philosophy and the kind of thought process that we're using in MBK and kind of put it into overall schools and overall school districts, and this would be to the benefit of our students of color, right? And again, I want to become a leader of color who can hire teachers of color, Black men of color, to teach our students as well. So these are like all of the things that kind of go into answering this question. Sorry for being long-winded, guys.
No, there's nothing
wrong. Yeah, no problem.
So our last and final question here today is there anything that I didn't ask or that we didn't ask but should have?
Oh, wow. You guys kind of got me stuck on this question. Is there anything that you guys didn't ask that you should have asked? I don't know. I can't think.
Okay. That's all good. Say you don't know. I think it'll do.
Yeah, to be honest, that is an answer. You don't know. Well, that concludes our interview.
Mr. A, thank you for being here with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for
Jerry. No problem.
How you guys doing? How's the summer going?
Summer's good.
Yeah, it's going all right. I still need more things to do.
Need more things to do. Aren't you guys doing an internship?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, but that's like twice a week.
Okay. You guys gonna get jobs or anything like that?
Nah, I'm unemployed.
I might.
You guys, summer, even though this is like week four of summer? Week four.
Yeah.
Ended. You only have like 6 more weeks.
But I'm going on vacation, so maybe when I get back.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Jamaica.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving like the 26th of July.
Yeah. What about you, Terrell? You going anywhere?
I don't think I'm going anywhere. I might go visit some colleges. I'm visiting colleges, and that's about it.
Yeah, I go away the first week of August, and then the last week of August, I'll be at the school from the 22nd being football practice. Did you guys go to the junior boot camp